Brought to you on UK Health Radio, The Natural Beauty Show, an in-depth look at the beauty issues that affect you. Hello and welcome back to The Natural Beauty Show. Today we're going to be touching on a subject that affects all of us on a global scale. As always, remember you can get involved with any of the conversations we're having today via our Twitter page at Nat Elliott Life. Have your say. Tweet us at Nat Elliott Life and get involved with the show. Put your questions to the experts. We've all been hearing a lot about climate change and the necessary actions required globally to protect our planet from devastating and life-changing occurrences in the very near future. The changes needed are both monumental and on a wide-reaching scale. One fact that we all need to accept is that making the small changes are no longer going to make a difference. What's required is a human change to our approach to everything on a societal level. As a multi-billion pound global industry, as with all major global industries, right now the beauty business has a responsibility to look inward. So, when considering their own sustainable actions, beauty brands must consider a holistic, environmentally conscious approach in order to positively contribute to the demands of our planet. But how close to the grassroots of things can this actually get? Is it enough that beauty brands only consider packaging and the source of their ingredients? When a product is so dependent upon a particular ingredient, is there more that can be done to support the welfare of the communities, local businesses, and the longevity of the land that produce these elements? One well-known high street brand is taking this extra step, and the communities and environment around them are reaping the rewards of their attention and support. That brand is Lush, and joining me now is Gabby Ludd, the Global Buying Director for the brand, to explain more about what they're doing to make a difference. Lush, well known for its fresh ingredients and obviously heavily dependent upon that continuous supply of fresh ingredients. So talk to us about how you're doing things so differently.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. So at Lush, yes, we make fresh handmade cosmetics and we actually manufacture our products in multiple different factories around the world, all handmade, so that we can have the shortest possible distance to the shops as well. And whilst we might share some global sources or supply, we also have very localized sourcing to support our local economies or projects in the regions that we're operating in. I'd say for the last 10, 11, 12 years, we've really been on this mission to think about how we can move beyond the concept of doing no harm through the way that we source ingredients, which is really what sustainability is. It's making sure that we're not deteriorating things further, to this really exciting concept of, rather than just doing no harm, how can we create a positive impact through every system that we interact with or touch with? And that's what we call our regenerative vision. Can we have an environmentally and socially positive impact through the ingredients we source in the communities that we work with? Now, that sounds, when we put it like that, it sounds quite simple, quite logical. We want to do good, but it's quite a complex approach and topic, I'd say mainly because there isn't a cookie cutter answer for what regenerative looks like for every ingredient. And we use thousands of different materials across our product ranges, from fresh fruit and vegetables to essential oils, oils, butters, safe synthetics, you name it. And so part of the challenge there is understanding. So first having that transparency and traceability on where ingredients are coming from, and then understanding the unique pressure points or geographical challenges that are associated with those and what the opportunities are for working directly with our growers or producers to create these positive impacts or systems. And really everything is interconnected, right? So it's not that we can just focus on purely the environmental. It has to be the environmental and the social interlinked, because we're all part of one ecosystem. Everything links together one way or another. So in terms of what that means for us, is it's very much an ongoing journey. I'm not going to say that we've achieved our regenerative vision and everything is great, because the other thing is that regeneration is dynamic. It's a constantly evolving concept as well, and something that's good enough today might not be in a year's time. So we have to constantly revisit and adapt. And really with a regenerative approach, the place dictates the solution as well. So it is that very unique and tailored approach to make sure that it is appropriate. And it's a lot about learning as well, and trial and error to find out what the right solutions are in the right context.
Okay. Could you give us an example of, just one of the projects at grassroots level that you're working with?
Absolutely. I think I'll start with one of the ones that was fundamental in our journey towards understanding what regenerative could look like in context of sourcing of materials. And that was actually about, I'd say again, 10, 11 years ago, we started working with this amazing organization called the Ghana Permaculture Institute, or GPI, with a fantastic visionary man called Dr. Paul Yeboah, who sadly passed away in the last month or so. But he was really our introduction to permaculture. And what Paul was doing on the ground is he had this vision of using permaculture techniques, which are care of people, care of earth, fair share, and applying this regenerative growing or agriculture model to include food security and value addition opportunities for things that could be sold on a wider market. And one of the first projects with him was he'd actually found this really degraded piece of land because they'd been building roads and they'd scraped off all the topsoil. And he believed that he could transform this absolutely barren, degraded piece of land into something vibrant and thriving, enhancing biodiversity. And so we worked and we provided some funding to kickstart that. And one of the cornerstone species in that whole project was moringa, because moringa is quite fast growing. You can make oil, you can use the leaves for eating or for teas. And he created this amazing, just this amazing showcase or a demonstration site of how you could turn around something that had been stripped of its resources to create a polyculture system where everything was benefiting. So all of the inputs were being maximized and supporting one another and creating this really diverse and robust. And I think robust and resilient are really important words when we're thinking about this system that enabled them to produce the moringa oil, which we then started using. And it was our first introduction really to using moringa oil in our products, which is a really beautiful one. But alongside the moringa, he planted lemongrass for essential oils. There were loads of food crops, pineapples in there, and creating this really diverse system and quite a small piece of land. But I think that the key thing here was that he was creating a demonstration site. And this is a site that is accessible to anyone to visit. And it was showcasing different ways of doing things and how plants could mutually benefit one another. I think, unfortunately, very often we find that people come in with a set idea as to what something could be, and they just plow straight in and do it. But we know from experience that often these things don't work, or there's some fine tuning to be done. And by creating a demonstration site, you're starting small, you're proving a concept, and you're creating space for innovation and experimentation to really see how you can best design these systems. And that then expanded. So there's the demonstration site, the Ghana Permaculture Institute, where we get moringa oil from. But that learning expanded to a network of thousands of farmers in the region, where he supported them on growing moringa, provides a market for it, presses it on site. And that's just one example of a really beautiful taking it from the opposite end of the scale, the degenerative end of the spectrum, beyond just sustainable, to something truly regenerative that is repairing the soil, that is supporting the biodiversity and doing local value addition. So really creating much needed income in the region for beautiful material.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how important do you think it is that brands that really heavily rely upon fresh ingredients, how important do you think it is that their mindset starts to move from just sustainability into that more regenerative?
I think that absolutely for fresh ingredients, but there's a varying scope of fresh, right? There's your super fresh fruit and vegetables. Your vegetable was picked yesterday. You're using it in a product now. But there are also your oils, your butters, all of these things that are naturally derived that come from plants and grown ecosystems. And I think that now more than ever, we really need to be moving all of us beyond the concept of just keeping things as they are, because we know that these are very challenging times. We're facing huge changes in rainfall patterns, climate change in general. We're facing mass migration of people as well as climate tends to change. And I would say that really, when we're thinking about it, we have a responsibility to build in resilience to the systems that we're working with. And part of that is building in alternative cash crops, building in food sovereignty or food security as well. Because often what you find Well, I say often, but I'll give you an example of one of the projects we work with in Kenya. When we first went to visit this set of farmers, as we were driving along, there were all these piles of carrots, heaps and heaps of carrots at the side of the road. And they weren't waiting to be picked up. They were deteriorating. Mm. And when we spoke to the farmers to ask them about it, what had happened was that they'd been asked to grow carrots for an international buyer that would be buying them. But when the harvest season came, the market wasn't there anymore. Mm. So they were left with this one crop that they'd really focused on, and they'd focused on it to the exclusion of meeting their own food needs. It was very much a one crop approach, which left them in an incredibly vulnerable situation. Mm. And so we've been working with those farmers to introduce alternative cash crops. We now grow geranium with them, some tagetes to produce into essential oils locally. Mm-hmm. But alongside that, part of the agreement is that they must be growing the food crops that are crucial to them as well, so that even if the worst happens, where one of the crops fails, the other one should still be viable, and they've met a lot of those food needs. So when we talk about the importance of brands moving beyond just thinking about sustainability, I think that for all of us, for our businesses to survive or to grow or to do well, it's important that every part of our supplier web is thriving as well, because we're heavily reliant on one another. And really, they are partnerships and collaboration. And we have a responsibility to make sure that wherever we can, we're supporting the growers on the ground with alternative techniques. And often these alternative techniques are actually really local, traditional knowledge that has been forgotten or misplaced in favor of mass produce or more modern ways of growing things.
Yes.
And it's such an exciting opportunity to be able to share that learning. So to be learning from different groups that you work with, sharing some of that best practice and knowledge. Mm. But we have to be thinking about how we create resilience on a local level and a geographical resilience. If we're talking about brands and their supply webs, it's important to not just be reliant on one area, but where possible to be supporting multiple projects or groups so that you have some geographical resilience and spread too.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're communicating this effort that you're making to your customers, are they keen to hear more about this? I mean, how important is this action that you're taking to your buyers, to the people that want to buy your products?
You know, I would say that, if I'm very honest, we focus so much of our time and energy on doing and not always as much about on talking about what we have done.
Yeah.
I think that there is an expectation from our customers, because we have amazing, really engaged customers that expect a lot from us and that ask very difficult questions as well, which are crucial for our learning and helping shape our strategies. But I think there is an expectation that for us as a brand, we are doing, I'm hesitant to say the right thing, because that sounds so glib and cliche, but I think it does matter to people where ingredients are coming from. It matters about the quality, but also our commitment, not just to non-animal testing, but to sourcing these ingredients in a way that supports environmental and social regeneration. I think it's really important.
Yeah. And I think this importance is going to be growing, isn't it, with the whole COP26 and everyone becoming way, way more aware of everything they're consuming, really, not just beauty products, foods, transportation, the lot, isn't it? So I think more and more, perhaps you're going to be called to answer more of these questions. And fantastic that you've got such a lovely story to tell as well. So what for the future? Are there any exciting new projects coming up?
Constantly exciting new projects. So as I mentioned, it's very much a work in progress for us. So we're constantly reviewing our suite of materials or ingredients that we use across our products and identifying those using a software for mapping or risk identification, but also really utilizing our relationships and the conversations we have with our suppliers and growers. Or in non-pandemic times, we spend a lot of time on the ground with growers, farmers, manufacturers to really understand, because seeing it firsthand is very different to receiving a survey or
absolutely,
a checklist. So for us, we're constantly reviewing the materials to identify those that have the biggest opportunities. We're constantly looking for new sources through our web or our network of people that we work with and trying to bring those on board. But I think a big focus for us, it's almost easier when you're starting a project from scratch, when you have a blank slate, you have someone amazing like Paul Yeboah or Ghana Permaculture Institute, and everything gets built in from the very beginning to support this regenerative vision. It's a lot of work and it can be a bit of a risk, but you're laying the foundations right. I think a super exciting opportunity for us is, how do we now take the learning from the last 10 years and the constant new information or ideas that we're gathering and work with our existing web of suppliers, people that don't just supply Lush, but that supply other customers as well, on identifying those opportunities to make those small changes, because sometimes it can be small, to move towards regenerative, because that amplifies the impact, right? That allows not just us to benefit from it, but all of their other customers as well. And that's a way to really increase that impact. So at the moment, we've just started working with a few suppliers on mapping out what it might look like if we introduced more agroecology principles. And again, each material is unique and it's a different set. But so for us, that's a really big focus on sharing our vision of regeneration with our suppliers, which we've been working really hard to do, but then also partnering with these established existing organizations to understand how we can work collaboratively to bring about some of those positive changes.
Yeah. So tell us about any of the newer projects that you're currently working on.
Well, we've just introduced two amazing new sources. One of them linked to our frankincense oil that we use from the Dayaha region in Somaliland. And we've been using frankincense since the very beginning of Lush. It's such a beautiful, almost iconic ingredient in fragrance. And we work with a number of amazing sources in Somaliland, but the new one is actually going to be, the first blockchain-backed, fully traceable source of the frankincense oil, all the way from the harvesting communities to the finished oil. And it's also linked to verification of sustainable harvesting practices, because there have been some concerns in recent years about overtapping of trees. So that's a really exciting example of how technology can also support their transparency or provide additional reassurances on materials where people might have some concerns. And then we've just worked with our supplier to seed fund a project locally where the women in the community, because women aren't really generally part of the harvesting or the dealing of frankincense, the women are actually going to be trained on distilling frankincense oil locally, which is also something that doesn't happen, partly because there are great water shortages. But so the women will have a test still, they'll be able to produce their own small batches of frankincense oil, and they'll be able to use it in their own local products or sell it on the wider market. So that's a really exciting one. So you've got the sustainable harvesting of the trees, the women's empowerment, and this is led by projects that the women in the community identified that's they amazing. Would like to be part of. Yeah, super important. And then we also have an amazing new source of sandalwood oil that we've brought into the mix from West Timor. And we've actually funded, my colleague Agnes has worked really hard on this one, and we funded the planting of 20,000 new sandalwood seedlings. It's already a protected area that they're working in, and the seedlings are distributed on community land. And then there's also 1,000 seedlings that have been planted that will be the mother trees. Mm-hmm. So the trees from which all future seeds will be gathered, and those trees will be protected. They won't be utilized for oil production. Definitely. But in that region, they're also partnering with the local NGO, and it's the natural habitat of a Komodo dragon. So the conservation or the protection of the Komodo dragon in that region too. So it's a lovely example of the sustainable harvesting practices, the replanting of trees to secure future supply, establishing the mother trees so that there's the ongoing source of seeds, and then the conservation element built into.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because that's often overlooked, isn't it? That, you know, you just mentioned there the mother tree. I mean, coconut oil is something that's used quite widely now, especially with the natural products. And, you know, just the kind of the constant harvesting of those trees, you know, you do need that mother source, don't you, all the time?
It's actually, coconut oil is a really exciting one as well. And this is one where, as I said, we start some of our own projects, but we also work with a number of amazing people that are doing incredibly inspirational things. And one of our sources of coconut oil is a company called Alawan, and they operate on an island called Simalu in Indonesia, off Sumatra. And they produce an amazing, beautiful, extra virgin cold pressed coconut oil that we use. Okay. But they have also been working on replanting, because as with any species, trees come to the end of their productive life. And if you're looking into the future and you're talking about really creating resilience, it's important to make sure that trees are being replanted. So they've done a big replanting program as a pilot, and they wanted to scale that up. But they also build in marine turtle conservation and songbird protection programs. So it's all of these different considerations. It's the current practices, it's the supporting people in organic certification, it's the conservation, and then it's the future security of supply as well. So it is hugely important. And I think the demand for coconut oil will keep growing and increasing. It's such a
well, it's such a versatile oil, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can use it for cooking all over your body. It's medicinal. There's so many factors to it. So,
it's amazing.
Definitely. Well, I mean, I'm so impressed by this. I mean, it also goes to show that there is so much more that can be done. And in actual fact, if more and more of the larger brands started to really think about this, the effect could be monumental, couldn't it? It could be huge, actually. It could change the way most things are done within the beauty industry, actually. So,
yeah,
no, it's amazing. Well, I mean, Lush, as everybody knows, it's a very familiar high street brand to us now. We all smell it before we see it. It's wonderful. And, you know, how amazing that we hear that, you know, so much good is going into how you're actually creating your products, which is brilliant. So could you just remind our listeners of the website that people can go to find Lush products?
Absolutely. If you're in the UK, you can go to lush.co.uk, where we have our new e-commerce site. But we also have a site where you can find out more statistics and information on our sourcing, including a calendar that shows a harvest and a map showing where a lot of our ingredients come from. So if you go to weare.lush.com, you'll be able to go through to our We Are Buying site, where it talks a lot about the different ingredients that we source and a lot of the statistics linked to it. It tells you more about our ethical considerations when we're buying, our buying policies and similar. And that's a really helpful tool or resource when you want a bit more in-depth knowledge or understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. And the transparency is amazing because, that, again, I think that's something consumers want more and more of, that transparency of how are you getting this from conception to my bathroom shelves, basically. And yeah, fantastic. Well, I'd recommend anyone to check that out. Well, thank you for joining me today, Gabby. I really appreciate that. And good luck with all the exciting projects you're working on.
Thank you so much.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So today we've been talking about the regenerative actions that beauty brands can take to ensure that the production of the products we all know and love in the Western world are able to continue in light of the global pressure to adopt more sustainable and gentler approaches to manufacturing. So far we've heard about the brilliant work of Lush and their international grassroots projects that are making a huge difference. But what about a bit closer to home? Scrubby is a brand that is demonstrating that regenerative actions are also possible on our doorstep. Joining me now is Madeleine Booth, the founder of Scrubby. Let's start by talking about Scrubby. Tell us about the brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on today. So in a nutshell, what Scrubby is we are a sustainable skincare startup. And what we focus on is taking byproducts from the drink industry and upcycling them into affordable, effective skincare. So we've actually only been going about 10 months now. So we're still brand new, kind of venturing into this market. And we launched with our first product line, which is our coffee face scrub. So what we do there is we partner with cafes based in Birmingham, where we are here, and we take their leftover coffee, which would once go to landfill, and we upcycle that into our products.
Yeah. And it's my understanding that actually you're probably saving these coffee shops that you're taking the grains from, the leftover coffee granules from. You're actually saving them a bit of money, aren't you? Because don't they normally have to pay councils to take away their waste?
Yes, they do. Yeah. So they have to pay for it to go to landfill. So what would happen without us in the process is cafes would pay for this leftover coffee, which in some cafes is loads and loads of kilograms going straight to landfill. And what you maybe might not know is that coffee, once it goes to landfill, it's actually a huge emitter of methane. So one of the most harmful greenhouse gases out there. And so obviously in the UK, we actually produce about 500,000 tons of this every single year going to landfill. So we're hoping to make a bit of an impact on that journey.
Yeah, that's huge. I had no realization that it was that significant, and actually that it produced methane as a bygas in its decomposition. So yeah, that's really interesting. And coffee granules themselves are really beneficial to the face, aren't they? They're a great ingredient to have in a beauty product anyway.
They are, yes. So they have antibacterial and antimicrobial properties, which especially are really, really good for skin that's facing acne and breakouts. So teenage skin, perfect for, but also young adults that are facing the acne. And that's kind of where I came from and why I actually started the journey, because I myself was facing acne for the first time at about 19, 20 years old. And that's kind of why I got into researching around coffee and the benefits it does actually have for acne skin.
Yeah. And it's not just exclusive to young skin, of course. I mean, anyone, I mean, especially women, where we go through massive hormonal changes throughout our lives. And, you know, that breakout can happen at any time, really, can't it? So, yeah, it's fantastic. So how on earth did this business idea come about? What happened?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a strange journey. So I actually started running the business whilst I was at university. So at the time, it was about a year and a half ago, and I was in my final year of university. So I studied global sustainable development at Warwick. So the sustainability aspect has been a huge part of my life. So I was faced with a bit of a triple dilemma, which is why I ended up starting the business. So I was a student, again, as I mentioned, facing acne for the first time. I was a student that was studying sustainability, so looking to change my entire lifestyle to be more sustainable. And thirdly, I was a student on a really low budget. And so I was looking literally for anything out there that could help me kind of actually take back control of my skin and not let it affect my day-to-day life. I mean, I was stopping. I wasn't going out. I wasn't going to lectures. I wasn't going to parties and enjoying what I should have as a student throughout that final year, even though COVID eventually took that away from me anyway. But that's kind of where I got to. So I was facing a bit of that triple dilemma and really just got going with it. I mean, I've been fascinated with the creativity of actually creating a product from scratch. And so what it started off with was I was actually working in a coffee shop at the time and seeing how much coffee was going to waste every single day and how much we're actually paying for that as well to go to waste. So I kind of just began taking it home and hundreds of bags later, using it, literally just giving it to my friends, making the most simplistic version of a coffee face scrub that you could, it growing mold 2 weeks later and trying to work out why it was growing mold. And really from that point onwards, that real trial and error for about a year and a half process, we actually got to our point in January where we had that final recipe. It's perfect as we could get it. And we actually launched the product in that sense.
Let's talk a bit more about sustainability and the beauty industry. And obviously, you know, your background's fantastic for you coming into the beauty market, because I suppose you've got this kind of oversight of where we're getting things wrong or where the industry's really historically just become stuck in a rut a little bit. But where do you think the focus should be to make this industry, which is a giant, by the way, you know,
Definitely.
where can it start to make itself more sustainable?
Yeah, and I just to reiterate, I read something recently that said that the beauty industry, cosmetic industry, is the third like harmful emitting sector in the UK at this moment in time, and that grew exponentially over the COVID period. So it's a really perfect time for this agenda to be spoken about within the cosmetic industry. So where we position ourselves and where we see the most important aspect of sustainability within the cosmetic industry is something that you might have heard called the circular economy. So what we're trying to do is bring that circular economy model into the cosmetics and creating a more circular cosmetics. So for us, it's all about making sure that the product doesn't take the linear approach of take, make, waste. And it's more about making sure everything that goes into the products, from ingredients, those raw ingredients, where those are coming from, who's working on those areas, how that's transported, who are the suppliers, are they local, are they UK based, and really trying to close that loop so that you're able to make sure that everything from ingredients to packaging to manufacturing to actual consumer use and the afterlife of the product is a really close net system and is circular. So we frame ourselves as zero waste. So obviously taking that coffee in that aspect, we're kind of trying to close that loop a little bit more for ourselves. Our packaging is reusable, everything from kind of our actual jars themselves to our filling products and our delivery. We're switching over to using zero emissions delivery. So it's really just thinking about your whole entire supply chain. And that's not just tier one, it's also tier two. So those suppliers that you work with, who are their suppliers as well. So it's really looking at as much as you can in a most broad sense so that you can see each area and how it interlinks to your sustainability.
Yeah. And does it frustrate you that there are brands like yourselves that are really, you know, going that extra mile? And like you say, you're going into tier two, you know, you're not just looking at your suppliers, you're looking at the suppliers of them and, you know, going right back into grassroots and the effect, the knock on effect it has. Does it frustrate you that some brands, maybe some of the larger, older brands that have been established for longer, are really slow on the uptake of this?
Yeah, it is frustrating because what we focus on is educating our customers as much as possible. And I think that's probably the biggest impact that we can have. So showing them an example of how it can be done in the most circular way. I mean, we know we aren't perfect as well. We know we've got things that we can work on. And I think that's probably the most important thing when businesses are trying to become more sustainable. They don't have to do it all at once. It's those small stages, small changes that they can make really do have a large impact. So I think what any big business that's listening or anything like that, I'd say just try and make those small changes as much as you can. And I know within big businesses, I mean, we work with them quite a lot, and it's really difficult for them to change because they've got the bureaucracy and the hierarchy and everything like that, that actually makes it a lot more difficult than it does for small businesses to change. But that doesn't mean to say that they haven't got the financial capacity, the human capacity to actually do that. So yeah, it definitely is frustrating overall.
So we talked a bit about coffee, how you're using coffee beans or leftover coffee beans and granules in your products. What other ingredients can you utilise?
Yeah, so it's a little under wrap at the moment. We're currently looking at doing a proof of concept. Okay. Around different byproducts from different drink industries. Lovely. That we can repurpose. There are a huge amount of byproducts that are produced from food and drink industries out there. So if there's any food industries or drink industries that are listening that have huge byproducts that they're looking to do something with, that's what we're going to be focusing on next. So we're going to be really drilling into the research and design and development aspect of that and looking at what it may be that businesses around a particular type of drink industry have that byproduct. But what we really want to focus on is those byproducts that are actually damaging. So whether it's like coffee, their byproduct, once it goes to landfill, it is actually damaging. So us bringing that back and giving it into the system again obviously reduces its carbon footprint, it reduces its methane output, etc. So that for us is going to be a key aspect that we're going to be looking at developing.
I mean, it's really interesting because today's show is all about looking at the regenerative actions of brands, and we've actually spoken to Lush already about the actions they've put in place at grassroots level. So looking at the farmers around the world that actually produce a lot of the raw ingredients that they use. I mean, Lush is well known for putting a lot of, you know, raw natural ingredients in their products, and their demand for those ingredients is quite large. But actually what you're doing is regeneration on the ground here in the UK, and that's a completely different look at it, isn't it, really? So you're taking ingredients that would normally have a knock-on effect within the UK society, within our own environment, and saying actually let's try and do something good with this. That's amazing. It's really, really interesting. Great stuff. And what are the futures for the brand? I mean, obviously, you know, this is your business, this is your dream. You know, where do you want to take this? What sort of possibilities are there?
Yeah, I mean, there are a huge number of possibilities, and every single day we're kind of meeting with new manufacturers, meeting with new suppliers, new shops, And I mean, in the 10 months that we've been going, so we've kind of gone from being a small startup to a scale up now. So we've received grant funding from government bodies and accelerators and things like that. So we've got quite a big backing as well, which is amazing. And the kind of support that we've had from the sustainability groups as well has been huge. And we've really been working really closely with NatWest as a business, kind of helping us on our business growth journey. Brilliant. So we're hoping that kind of our goal is by this time next year that we would be a recognized brand on the either sustainability aspect or whether it's the skincare aspect for ourselves. So we're really looking to bring out whole product lines that are focused on that upcycling aspect and kind of bringing that byproduct beauty into a bit more of the social realm and it being more recognized for our customers as well, because it is still a relatively new term. So trying to make that something that customers do recognize in their journey.
Do you think customers are actually aware of the desperate need for sustainability across all industries? Do you think it's apparent to them? I mean, obviously, industries are actually starting to get on board now, aren't they? They're starting to realise, actually, it comes down to the way I'm producing things and what I'm doing. But do you think consumers are now, they've got a better awareness that sustainability is so necessary?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think even the COVID kind of period for us, we've seen so much more engagement within the sustainability realm. So we work with a large variety of like sustainability groups, whether it's climate action groups or whether it's actual grassroots aspects here in Birmingham. That for us, those groups have grown hugely throughout the COVID period. And I definitely think from our side of view, we've actually seen customers engaging more with that topic and more with what it is that we can improve on, what it is that other businesses can improve on. And we do something at Scrubby where we take on interns for a certain amount of time so that we can kind of enable students to break out of that catch 22 where they can't get experience because they need experience to get the experience. And the students have been the ones where the sustainability has been what's drawn them into our business. So I definitely think in terms of what the future looks like, not just for cosmetic and beauty businesses, but also cross-sector industries, that's becoming a huge aspect where students and young people really want to get into businesses that are doing not only well, but also doing good.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Gosh, what a fantastic world it could possibly be if we grab hold of this. That's excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Madeline. It's been lovely speaking to you. Can you just give us the URL of your website so that people can go to it?
Yeah, of course. It's www.scrubby, spelled with two B's and two E's, .co.uk.
Lovely. Okay, and we'll make sure that goes up on the UK Health Radio website as well so people can follow it easily. Thanks ever so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was lovely to meet you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It's now time for the brand spotlight section of the show, where we take a deep dive into a brand making waves within the industry. Joining me now is Joy Howison, who is the founder of Project Lip. Thanks for joining us today, Joy. And I'd love to hear a bit more about Project Lip, how it came about and what sort of products you offer.
Great. And thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. So yes, Project Lip, we are an independent brand that is a complete startup project. And we are a lip plumping brand that is natural, vegan and cruelty free, which is really important for myself and the brand. And we launched with our first product, which is a matte plumping primer, which was first of its kind on the UK market and a very exciting product to launch the brand with. And then we've now got multiple products which we offer to give an alternative to naturally plump your lips, so you don't have to use injections or get lip fillers, which we get a lot of consumers, you know, loving the product as an alternative, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing because there are so many people that are really against the injection route, aren't they? And they don't really want to go down the route of putting things inside their body. Is that how you fell into it? Is it something that you yourself were looking for?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the brand and the product, it works with and without fillers. But for us, we are here to offer an alternative for anybody who doesn't want a permanent enhancement and or perhaps they're looking for that, but they'd like to test how it may feel or be. And we also, you know, we're there for those people and consumers as well. So for myself personally, when I was thinking of the product and having the idea going around in my head before the brand had launched, I was in a place where I was working on a Mac counter in Selfridges, which was a really exciting opportunity and got me into the beauty industry. But I was finding there was a massive trend for lip fillers and bigger lips, and it was coming from society and social media that was around me at the time. And I just didn't want to go down that route. I was, you know, scared to kind of like do that. At the time I was about 19, so it just didn't really enter my head to have any kind of enhancements done. And I thought there must be something other than a lip plumping gloss that is in, that was on the market, because at the time as well the trends were leading themselves all about a matte lip. Gloss wasn't really worn that much. And that's the kind of like industry experience I had from working on the counter, to have those trends constantly at my fingertips. And I just, that's where the idea was born. I thought there's got to be an alternative to plump your lips and not have glossy lips type, you know. So that's where the matte plumping primer came from.
Yeah. And you mentioned Instagram then, and it's such an influencer, isn't it? Just the platform as a whole. It really sways, doesn't it? Where the market's led, really, especially within beauty. So what other products do you have? So you've mentioned your matte lip plumper, but what other products? And were they sort of directed by that Instagram trend as well?
Yeah, definitely. So the brand started with that product and it then grew into other products. So we've now got plumping tinted lip balms. So if you want a little hint of a colour, again, with the same collagen enhancing ingredients that'll, you know, work instantly and long term. And then with the trend changing, we actually brought out a gloss as well, which was, you know, offering, it just opened up our audience really for people who do want to wear a gloss. And gloss is a lot more trend focused now as well. People are wearing a lot more. So we've got a variety of primers, colours, glosses, and then also lip care, where we have lip scrubs and lip masks, again, with collagen boosting ingredients to naturally enhance your lip shape. So we've got the whole kit really for somebody to have a full lip.
I'd love to dive a bit more into the ingredients side of it. So you mentioned then collagen enhancing. Is that how it works then? How are the lips stimulated? How do you get that plump effect?
Yeah, so it's a completely unique formula with secret ingredients. But they basically tingle upon application, and that stimulates your blood flow, which gives you a fuller, plumper lip look. And depending on how that's formulated, gives you, you know, your unique plumping formulation. Yeah. And with ours, it has like quite a strong tingle, nothing unwearable, but it definitely, you can feel something happening on your lips, which is important for consumers. They want to feel like it's something happening. But equally, that gives an instant effect. And then we have other ingredients that are collagen-based that will increase your lips naturally. Scientifically proven if used every single day for 28 days, which is really good to have that kind of claim within our product. So it's not just an instant quick hit, it also works on a long-term benefit.
Yeah, amazing. And how long would it last? Like if I use the, you know, you mentioned the one that's quite tingly and it gives the instant effect. How long is that likely to last?
The tingle?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it can last from around 10 minutes up to around 30 minutes, depending on how much you apply. We have a lot of customers that just love the tingle and more and more and more on. But again, it is a natural tingle. It's nothing harmful. So people can be a little bit taken back that it tingles, but that is what is stimulating your blood flow. And that is what is getting the instant effect. There are a lot of pumpers out there on the market that have that kind of tingly feel. But ours is uniquely formulated to ensure that it's not too strong.
Yeah, sure. And we're coming up to a really busy time, aren't we, Christmas? I mean, would your products make good stocking fillers? Is that something that people should be interested in as a great stocking filler for their partner?
Definitely. I mean, it's great because we, as a brand, we apply to, you know, we all audiences and all age groups as well, because of, you know, everybody, whether you're male or female, you know, they may want to plump their lips. So, you know, we have a massive consumer base, and yeah, definitely good for Christmas fillers.
And where can we find it? Where can the listeners find your products?
So yes, we retail on projectlip.com, which is our own website. And then we also have retail partners. We're on prettylittlething.com, Boohoo, Lookfantastic, very.com, and also Beauty Bay, which is a really big cosmetic site as well.
Yeah, lovely. Okay, well, I'd really recommend people going to your website, finding out a bit more and giving it a go. I mean, the rise of non-surgical enhancements in the beauty industry is huge, isn't it? And it's definitely worth, even if you're thinking about going down the more injectable route, it's worth maybe trying a product like this first just to see whether you like the effect of your lips being plumper. I know quite a few people that have been disappointed and it's too late. They've had the injections and they're kind of stuck. It's also a good option to just try things out and try that look out, I suppose. Do you find that with some of your customers, they come to you and they're like, look, I want to see before I try, try before I go deeper in?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've hit on a really good point there as well, that people, you know, they are trying products a lot now, and I think it's come a lot from the recent pandemic. People are really open to kind of self-care and trying a lot of different products to kind of make the best of themselves that they can do. And not everybody wants to go down the surgical route. So we have a massive customer base that absolutely love using our products every single day as a balm, like with the matte plumping primer. And then equally, you know, in meetings or at work or going from work to the evening time with our colour products and our glosses. So it just gives a really beautiful boost for the lips, which our customers absolutely love. But equally, you know, we do work with lip fillers and it naturally increases the collagen that you have in your lips. Therefore, even if you do have lip fillers, you still can use the product. And we have a lot of people, which I didn't expect when I launched the brand, that actually love the product as a booster treatment in between lip filler appointments, which was quite an interesting find for me once I've launched the brand. And, you know, it's great to kind of give them an extra boost if they want that.
So it kind of extends the life of their actual fillers that they have put in.
Well, yeah, I think when they're ready to get their top-up treatment, they love using the product just to give them that instant top-up, not a permanent one, but, you know, towards the treatment. Yeah, we get a lot of people saying, I love this in between my treatments. So it's amazing. Great to hear.
Yeah, worth giving it a go then. Lovely. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Joy.
Brilliant. Thank you for having me.
Brought to you on UK Health Radio, The Natural Beauty Show, an in-depth look at the beauty issues that affect you.